My guest at this time is Carl Higbee. He is author of the brand new book, Enemies Foreign and Domestic, A Seal's Story. Carl is a veteran of Operation Iraqi Freedom, where he served as a U.S. Navy SEAL, but some of his most intense battles have actually been with the military bureaucracy, and we'll get into that over the next several minutes. And Carl, thanks very much for being with us.
Yeah, appreciate it.
You have already written one book on your frustrations with your time in uniform, and we'll get into a lot of that as the conversation unfolds here. Why did you decide to write another book?
The first book was about the problems facing our military and about the problems facing our country. The second book is my story of how I took them on and actually won. I mean, this went all the way to a DOD appellate court in regards to my first book. And, you know, it's important for people to know the story of what happens when the military or the DOD or the government tries to railroad somebody and they lose. And this is the part that people need to know, is that this battle can be won, but you have to be vigilant and you have to make sure that you're doing everything properly.
Let's talk about some of the frustrations you had, and we'll get to the bigger story and how you were charged in just a little bit. But I believe it was on your second tour in Iraq that you ran into a tremendous amount of frustration. You had this elite Special Operations Unit, the SEAL team, that it was essentially not being used. You were stuck there on base. You were essentially handing off intel to other entities to pursue that intel. And for the most part, you weren't even allowed to shoot, much less go on any meaningful missions until the very end of that deployment. Talk about that, about why that was the case and how you guys reacted to that.
It was extremely frustrating because we were sitting over there as a SEAL fighting force. I mean, this is what we were designed to do. We weren't allowed to action missions. And the reason we weren't allowed to do anything was because the military at that time, because of Barack Obama, had become so politicized and so top-heavy in their bureaucracy that they wanted to end the war, but they didn't want to end the war by actually fighting it and winning it. They wanted to end the war by simply calling us the victors. And the enemy gets a say on whether or not that's the case. So for us to just say that we won and leave doesn't solve the problem, and that's how they were doing it. Finally, we ended up getting authorization to get a guy because he was such a high-value target that the military had no choice but to say, okay, go get this guy.
And that would be the Butcher of Fallujah, known as Al-Azawi. This is a guy who had hung U.S. personnel from the bridge in Fallujah, along with contractors, I believe, and you eventually got some good intel on where he was. Explain how that mission unfolded.
Well, the mission was a very textbook mission. I will say that, you know, the team we had was great. The intelligence we had was great. It was our own generated intelligence from within the own SEAL community. It was all based on a couple of really good guys that worked very hard for months and months to track this guy down. We went out, and I'll say the hero of the operation is Matt McCabe. This guy tackled the Butcher on target, and he had a gun, so he was in his legal authority to shoot him, but McCabe knew that if he were to tackle this guy and bring him back, that they would be more likely to get good intelligence that could potentially save American lives. And then at the end, he was one of the one guys who got hung out for the court-martial.
And let's get into that, because while Al-Azawi was in custody after the successful mission to grab him inside Iraq, ultimately you guys were all called in and asked to explain why the prisoner's clothes had gotten bloody. And at that point, you already knew trouble was on the way, correct?
Absolutely. I mean, what happened from the beginning was we were woken up, you know, a few hours after the operation, because we had all gone to bed, and we get woken up by our commander and said, hey, what's up with this? This guy's claiming you abused him. We're all like, whoa, 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 what is going on here? And the fact of the matter is, we were, you know, I'm 240 pounds. This guy was 6 feet tall, 130 pounds. If I had hit him, you would have known about it. And we had an oral surgeon testify to the fact that there was no abuse here. This was a self-inflicted bite wound. NCIS cleared us. Our chain of command, the SEAL leadership chain of command, was the one that actually hung us out, and it was a travesty.
Why did they hang you out?
Well, it was part of this politically correct push, this notion where they don't want to be held responsible for any potential negative media fallout. It's stunning, because we're soldiers in the United States military, the most lethal fighting force the world has ever known. We are there to put bullets in bad guys. We are not there to win hearts and minds. We're not there to rebuild schools, as we've been tasked to do recently. We are there to kill the bad guy. And, you know, if we go out, first off, who cares anyway? Even if we did abuse this guy, who cares? And that's the problem. We're developing into such a politically correct nature that our troops are getting sacrificed at the altar of political correctness.
How much blood are we even talking about here?
Oh, maybe like a quarter teaspoon. When you brush your teeth, your gums bleed more when you brush your teeth.
The Navy SEALs obviously are an elite unit. They know what type of work you need to do. Why do you think they picked this particular case? Was it because it was a high-profile target or some other reason that this little tiny bit of blood led to this huge fiasco?
It was right after the Abu Ghraib scenario, and I think the military was so hypersensitive to any even accusations. Now, nobody actually took a step back and said, wait a minute, this is a terrorist accusing our guys of this. Nobody looked at that like that. Instead, they were so quick to make sure that we were investigated by the NCIS. And I mean, if I was the commanding officer, I'd be like, wow, a terrorist is making accusations of abuse. Have a nice day. I wouldn't even have investigated it because that guy doesn't deserve that. Okay, he's not an American citizen. I don't think he has the same rights as American citizens. And we should have just, you know, honestly, we should have just dispatched him on target because he had a firearm. The issue is we can't let these unelected bureaucrats dictate the rules of engagement and the way we're fighting a war because we're losing. It's not working.
So they knew they didn't have much of a case because there wasn't much evidence, and your stories all corroborated each other, but then they tried to get you to rat each other out, correct?
Yep. So they originally tried to generals mast us, which is basically a commanding officer or a general can issue punishment as he sees fit. He doesn't have to go through any judiciary process, no evidence is produced or anything like that. He can just dish it out. But you have the option to go to a court-martial. Now, the court-martial, the potential for consequence is higher. Like, you could have a more serious sentence, but you also have to produce this little thing called evidence. And NCIS had said there's no case here, even though the command pushed forward. So we went to court-martial. Before we went to court-martial, they started threatening us, saying, if you go to court-martial, you know, you're really going to get screwed, this and that. We were like, you know what? First off, this is illegal. You can't be talking to me about this right now. And second off, we pushed against this machine, and they thought they could break us by offering us plea deals and promotions if we ratted each other out. But nobody did anything here. That's the fundamental fact.
And so ultimately, these courts martials did go forward, but there was nothing really to hang you guys on. So you all got off. And then you tried, of course, to publish your first book, Battle on the Home Front, about this, and you ran into another wall of obstruction, correct?
I tried for 2 years to get this thing vetted by the military. The military's own standard and law says they have 30 days from the time of submission to complete a review, an ethics and legal and security review of the manuscript. I submitted it 24 times the length of time that they allot by their own rules, and they refused to conduct the review. So I had a lawyer direct me and say, you can publish this book as long as you really believe there's no security violations. I contacted NCIS. NCIS did an informal review and said there's nothing classified in here whatsoever, and I published the book. The day I published the book, I received a review. They had given me any number of things that could be construed as potential security violations. At no point did they put any of this in writing because they knew that they were way past their deadline. And I told them, I said, I'm not going to stand for this anymore. If you guys want to go to court, let's go to court. They tried to captain's mask me a number of times. Every single time I requested the same court-martial, they gave me the same thing about they wouldn't be able to protect me if I went to court-martial. But at the end of the day, we came out on top. They offered me an honorable discharge to get out early. I took it. 6 weeks after leaving the military, they gave me they downgraded my discharge to a general, which is illegal. You have to attend a court-martial or an administrative separation board. Both of those are due process, and they had the opportunity to do it. They didn't, and so we went back to the military with my attorney, and after going back and 2 years of fighting back and forth, we won with a 5-0 appellate court decision in my favor to overturn my discharge back to honorable.
It's an amazing story, and I know your time is short here, Carl. Let me ask you a couple of quick questions just about where this all stands right now and how you view the military after your exceptional commitment to this country. We didn't even talk about another very gripping story in here that frustrated you and your unit tremendously, that got a friend of yours killed because of military protocol, forcing him to try and disarm an IED in a place where there were no people at risk of being harmed by the IED if he went off, but instead they made him try and disarm it right there. What is the reality in the United States military right now as you look at the all the rules that they're trying to enforce and the political aspect of this. How ready is our military to actually do what's necessary to win?
Well, our military has and always will be the most deadly fighting force the world has ever known, but you have to take the handcuffs off. You have America's sons and daughters who are serving in the military today are some of the most honorable, intelligent, best-trained people this world has ever known, but you have to let us do our job. We stand ready. We don't have the resources we do and the people we do because we attract bad people. It's the command leadership that is unwilling to fight this war, because you have politicians in Washington that were elected by 98% of the population that chose not to serve, which is okay, but they're governing the 2% that have chosen to serve, and that's not fair, and that's not how you win a war. You need war fighters and door kickers to make these decisions on site, and you need to let us do it.
And last question, sir, especially as we head towards Memorial Day weekend here, while the frustration with rules of engagement, while the frustration with the chain of command is certainly evident in this book, so is the unbreakable bond of the brotherhood that you have in your unit. Talk about what that meant to you and what you think of when you think of the men that you served with.
Well, I am truly humbled and honored to have served with the guys that I got to serve with, you know, and I'll always say this book is not a self-gloat. It's not to see how cool I am. I was not the biggest, fastest, strongest, best, or, you know, sharpest guy in my unit by any stretch of the imagination, but there were a lot of guys that were better than me and a lot of guys that I learned a lot from. And to me, to have the ability to serve with such a unit is such an incredible experience, and that's why I fight for the principles that I do in my books, because I genuinely believe they're worth fighting for.
Carl, congratulations on the new book. Thank you for your service to our country, and thank you for your time today.
Thank you, sir.
Carl Higbee is the author of Enemies, Foreign and Domestic, A SEAL's Story. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.